Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And Robert. Now, some of you guys might already know that we're usually on the air at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, except for the third Sunday of every month. That's where we have our lunchtime brunch show. So, to get the show rolling with me, I'd like to bring on my brother in the martial arts and esteemed co-host, Sifu Robert Deal. Sifu Bob, how you doing today? You're esteemed today.
I'm esteemed today. Usually people are trying to let the steam out of me. Now I've got the steam put in me. So, man, now I can't fit through the door. My head just got so big. Now, beautiful weather down there. So how's the weather in Seattle? Are you getting any snow yet?
No, but, you know, yesterday, last night, I thought it would have. It, you know how, like, snow air has that weird crisp odor to it, and you can kind of feel it in your hands, you know, when it's going to snow. Last night, it felt like it was going to snow, and I thought, oh, my God.
Well, you know, you asked me about that, you know, living in L.A. I do not know that feeling. Now, I do know that feeling with rain, where you may not because it rains so often. I can feel the rain.
Yeah. Usually, for me, after a long spell of not having rain, and then it does rain. Definitely, my fingers can feel the pressure change, but pretty well.
What do you consider not having rain for a while? What, a day and a half?
You know what's funny is that it doesn't really rain as much as, like, let's say, I don't know, like Chicago or, you know, that kind of thing. But the thing that makes Seattle rain weird is that not necessarily how often it rains, because a lot of people think that Seattle rain or Northwest rain. And when I say Seattle, I'm also including, you know, like Portland, you know, the whole Northwest area, you know, Vancouver, Canada included, you know, parts of Idaho and stuff like that, Oregon. But it's not so weird as that it rains all the time, because a lot of people think that rain is, you know, a session where rain falls out of the sky. It just so happens that here in Seattle, because of the way mountains sit and our convergence zone, it rains. It doesn't, like, rain and then stop. You've got mist rain. You've got what some people over here called, like, cloud rain. Basically, it's just heavy, heavy fog, but it's raining, you know. So cloud rain, misty rain, drizzle rain, showers, and there's that many definitions of what rain is. It's kind of like
not
crazy
down here. When it rains, it just rains.
Yeah, the Philippines too. It's like, oh, it's sunny, and someone dropped the bucket, and it's done. But
right.
All right. Well, for our listeners out there, our phone number is 347-677-0699. Later on, our special guest is going to be Bill Superfoot Wallace. For those of you that aren't familiar with Mr. Wallace, he was a name to be reckoned with in the 70s and the 80s. In fact, you know, Bob, I forgot when Mr. Wallace actually started his sport full contact karate career.
I think that was in the 70s. He was in the point circuit in the 60s.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Got it. But, yeah. Superfoot Wallace had one of the fastest kicking legs in the history of professional full contact karate. So, and a legend. He was one of the names that I admired when I was a kid, and many of us admired when following the sport karate circuit. So we'll be having him on at about a little after 11:30 a.m. Pacific time. So stay tuned, everyone. Go ahead, Bob.
You know, I read his kick was actually clocked at 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, right? Can you imagine? I can't imagine walking into that. Lights out.
I know. Bang. That's it. You know, my philosophy has always been to kick somebody in the head, they better be on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people like Bill Wallace, Heel Joe, people like that, that could kick you in the head five times before you even blink.
Oh, I know, right? And you know, the level of control that Superfoot has with that leg, still does to this day. The amount of control that he has as well as speed is just incredible. You know, I know I would, you know, kill to have kick control like that. You know, same with Sifu Aldakaskas. I mean, there was one time he did this demo where he stood toe-to-toe with someone, like nose-to-nose, and then plap, kicked this guy in the back of the head with a lead leg lifting round kick. And I was like, holy crap, do that again. We blinked and we missed
right.
It was like crazy. But that kind of reminds me, before we get into our other announcements here, Bob, that reminds me that we have the possibility. In fact, I shouldn't say the possibility, because I just confirmed with Sifu L and Sister Jules that there's going to be another show in the works on the Seiken Network, and it's most likely going to be called the Dacascos Ohana Hour, and it's going to be hosted technically by Sifu Aldakaskas, and assisted by Jules. And sorry, Sis Jules, you know, it's been so long since I've seen your last name on Facebook, and I've completely forgot your last name. She'll kill me.
Nelsioni.
But I deserve it. I deserve it. But she's just been Jules Ohana to me forever, and it's just been, it's been like a year and a 2 years or whatever, right, since I've seen her last name, and it's just like, ah. And of course, if she tells me on Facebook message, then I'll remember and feel like an idiot. But anyway, so
well,
that's
one
of our good
you
news.
You want to know what it is?
What's
it's
that?
Nelsioni.
Thank you.
Remember?
Jeez. Yes. Yes. Thank you, Julie Nelsioni. Thank you. Oh, see, now I feel like an idiot, but now she doesn't have to like email me and call me one.
Right.
She still can. But so, you know, Julia, and I call her Jules. Jules and Sifu L. Wow, what a combination to host a show.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah, to have a legend like that, you know, on our network and stuff. And so tentatively next week, Sifu, Bob, and I will be training Jules and Sifu Al on our control board. And stay tuned, everyone, for an upcoming first episode release date. So we'll get those two all trained up, and we'll go from there. All right. Well, it looks like we have a bunch of people signing in to our chat board and listening in. So, listeners, again, if you just tuned in, this is Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Our special guest a little bit later is Mr. Bill Superfoot Wallace, and we'll be having him on a little bit after 11:30, so don't go away, listeners. We've got some news and shout-outs and birthdays and stuff like that to announce before we get to our special guest, so stay tuned. Oh, of course, somebody just signed out.
Of course. Hopefully they'll sign back in.
Right. I know, right? It's like, stay tuned, everyone, and then they, like, go away. Okay. We see how you are out there. Okay. All right. So why don't we go ahead and get into our news and shout-outs. Who do we have for birthdays on your end there, Sifu Bob?
Well, you know what? We do have some notables. Not that everybody isn't important, because everybody is, but we do have some notable martial artists this week. On November 22nd, we have Silky Gary Dill, which studied under James Jim Lee, which studied directly under Bruce Lee. A good friend of mine for many, many years, Dana Thompson Martin, is on the 22nd. And Gerald Okamura, very famous stuntman, extra, fight choreographer, Dragon Fest promoter, his birthday is on 11/23. George Dillman, a very, very famous martial arts practitioner from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. His birthday is on 11/23.
Awesome. And I just want to add a couple also. A special shout-out out there goes to Jason Bingham Mancia, the husband of Sifu Angie Abad. So happy birthday. His birthday is on the 23rd as well. And I also want to send a shout-out to a former classmate and a student of the Christopher Petrilli Filipino Martial Arts Academy curriculum, fellow classmate, wonderful friend, Guru Amy Kieniger. If you're listening out there, Ames, happy birthday. Her birthday is on the 22nd. And for everyone that has a birthday this week, even if we haven't announced it, if you want a shout out, go ahead and go to the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page and let us know it's your birthday. Don't be shy, but for everyone that has a birthday out there, this tune's for you. Everybody. All right, let's get moving on to other shout outs. Let's go to the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. Now, before we get started with anything else, I do want to make mention of some very important events in regards to the Philippines typhoon relief. A bunch of people here in Seattle have really banded together to do fundraisers and benefits for the relief in the Philippines because, you know, if anyone hasn't been following the news about the typhoon in the Philippines, it decimated much of the Central Visayan region in the Philippines. And if I remember correctly, it hit Vietnam also. And, you know, when we talk about the Philippines, I want to make sure people know that we're not forgetting about the other places that got affected by Typhoon Haiyan. Vietnam did get hit also. So I just want to go through and announce some events that are going on. Now, Sifu Bob, can you tell us a little bit about – I'm trying to pull it up right now. Can you tell us a little bit about the fundraising book signing that Guru Mark Wiley is doing today? I know you had mentioned it and you thought about going to it. Let me pull it up here. But while, I was hoping you'd be able to stall for me while I try to pull it up. Let's see. Bob, you still there? It seems like your mic went weird.
I went on mute. I apologize. But Mark Wiley, and I was talking and you were talking over me. I'm going, what is she doing? So November 17th, today, Mark Wiley is having a book signing and a seminar at the House of Champions in Van Nuys, which is owned by Sheon Mark Parra. It goes from 1 till 4, and all proceeds go to benefit the Philippines Relief Fund.
Right on.
Very
House
cool.
Of Champions.
Very cool, Mark.
Yeah, you know, great event. And if you're in that area of Van Nuys, L.A., you know, do say hello to Guru Mark Wiley. And for those of you that aren't familiar with who he is, he's an established author with great books about the history of Filipino martial arts and stuff like that. So, you know, do support the cause, grab one of his books, and get it autographed. So I'm looking forward to hearing how that goes from Guru Mark after he's done with that. All right, now next Friday, November 23rd, I'm going to be involved with a fundraiser called Fundraiser Philippines, Mabuhay ang Pilipinas. It's a Chinese banquet and martial art demonstration event. It's going to be held at the House of Hong restaurant in the International District of Seattle, Washington, located at 409 8th Avenue South Seattle, Washington, 98104. And I'm working with Master Tony Au, who is the head coach of the Seattle International District Lion Dance Team. And he called me a few days ago and he said, "Hey, Rusty, I've got this great idea. You know, I want to do a typhoon relief thing for the Philippines. Let's just have a dinner and martial arts demos. You know, what do you think? You know, can you help me market this?" And I'm like, "Sure, you know, let's do this." So, again, it's going to be November 23rd, starts at 6 p.m. at the House of Hong, and we have a great multi-course Chinese banquet in store for everyone. It's the whole menu is put up on our Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, but it's only $30 per head or $300 per table, which seats 10 people. So if you can get 10 people together, Seattle folks, and buy a table, you know, please do, because you're going to get like an incredible Chinese style banquet and martial arts demos. And we're also looking for martial artists to donate their time as well as their $30 dinner ticket to donate their time to doing a martial arts demonstration. And we urge the martial art teachers that are attending to bring their students as well, because it's a wonderful cause. All the net proceeds will go directly to Philippines Aid. If I remember correctly, the restaurant is going to match our donation as well. So we'll see how that goes. It'll be fun next Friday. And also next Saturday, I lost my window. I don't know what happened. Oh, there it is. Okay. Gee whiz. I've got so many windows opened up on my computer. It's not even funny. And also on the following Sunday, the 24th, Master Andy Wilson of MKG Martial Arts, here in the Northgate area of Seattle, is hosting a multi-instructor seminar with Filipino martial arts instructors from all over the Puget Sound, as well as other martial artists from other systems. And just to give you a lineup, let's see if I can pull this up, just to see if I can get a lineup of our instructors here. Don't you hate that when you click on a picture and it doesn't want to pull up all the way, and you get like little tiny picture. This isn't working, but so much for that idea. So if you want to go to the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, you'll be able to get a copy of the flyer, and it lists all of the instructors on there. We've got Guru Roberto Pagan of PKT Tirsha. We've got Greg Heineman and Andy Wilson, both of the Inosano system. Really great names. I don't remember how many people are going to be teaching at this. I'm teaching as well. So I'm hoping to get Guru Cheryl Johnson to be playing with us. We've also got Lou Farrellin. That's going to be teaching with us. Who else can I remember off of the top of my head? Sifu Chris Clark of Inosanto Kali, JKD. Sifu Andy Dale, a great internal artist here in the Puget Sound area. And just a bunch of people. So if anyone can make it and learn great martial arts, it's only going to be, it's on a donation basis. You know, donate what you can for a day of seminars from 2 to approximately, 10, sorry, 10 to about 2 p.m. And we have a catered Filipino lunch in store for $10 a plate. So, you know, don't miss it. You know, great martial arts and Filipino food. And that's this coming Sunday, the 24th, at MKG Martial Arts. All right. And I think
I have one.
My shout outs. Yes, go ahead.
I got one. Okay. Grandmaster Renee Latosa.
Yes, I almost forgot about that. Thank you for reminding me.
I wasn't going to let you.
Thank you.
No date has been set. He has posted that he is looking for about 12 instructors. This is going to be in the Seattle area. I'm sorry. We're talking Seattle so much. This is going to be in the Stockton, California area. For more information, please contact Grandmaster Latosa at rzl@comcast.net or call him at 707-843-0640. This is to put it in his own words, this is a no bullshit, no ego, no advertising. A bunch of Filipino practitioners getting together and sharing, asking for donations to send back to the Filipino Relief Fund.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Congrats.
Yes, and there's so many fundraisers out there, and I just want to take the time to say to everyone, being Filipino, I want to take the time and say thank you so much for reaching out and donating time and your ideas and stuff like that throughout the United States for holding fundraisers for the Philippines, because, you know, we know about Katrina. We've dealt with our own hurricanes. We've dealt with our own earthquakes and stuff like that. And, you know, definitely not only do the American people step up for their own, but also for other countries in need. And if anyone hasn't seen pictures of the decimation in the Central Visayan region, it almost wiped Tacloban off the map, and other cities, you know, near the coast and even throughout the whole, you know, inland area of the Visayas region. Just incredible, sad devastation. And, you know, even to this day, you know, it's been like more than about a week or more, you know, since the typhoon, they're still having trouble clearing the roads so supplies can get through. And I can't imagine the what they're going through, because if you can't get anything in, you can't get anything out. I mean, bodies still laying in the street, you know, people, thousands upon thousands of people still missing. And, you know, those cash donations and these pledges that other countries have made, as well as our own country has made, you know, I can't thank, on behalf of the Filipino people, enough. I can't thank everyone enough for stepping up, because, you know, it restores my faith in humanity. What's that?
Let me point out one thing, though. If they can't make the seminars, if they can't donate that way, the American Red Cross is having a big push where you can donate $10.
Yes,
you can donate directly.
So
if you can't go to the seminars, you know, donate through the Red Cross. They're a great organization. They're here to help.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think I posted on our Facebook page a little bit about, you know, just what your change does. You know, I think I posted something about 60 pesos, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
60 pesos is only about like $1.40 or $1.50 in American dollars. Okay. Now, so if that's like $1.50, imagine the cost of, like, let's say a McDonald's meal, which is, I don't know, $6 or something like that. I mean, that's enough rice for 40 people. Now, for anyone that wants to donate directly to the Typhoon Relief Fund, you know, I just want to remind people out there, you know, when you donate items in kind, that means tangible items like shoes and clothes and teddy bears and stuff like that. You know, keep in mind, folks, that as well-meaning as it is for you to send a teddy bear to cheer up a child or to send your old shoes or something like that, they do appreciate the thought. However, because of the fact that it's tangible and it takes up space, you know, it's just going to make the whole process of getting supplies and other important stuff, namely food, water, and medicine, it's going to take it longer for stuff to get to the people that need it, because they have to sift through teddy bears and toys and clothes and shoes. If you want to help, please send cash, okay? Because it's really going to help the local economy over there rebuild because buying local. So, you know, please send cash. And to tell you the truth, you know, the Filipino people, you know, we're a very proud people, and we will accept clothing donations and stuff like that. But in this case, cash is best. Otherwise, you know, your well-meaning teddy bears and shoes and clothes are probably just going to end up, you know, being piled off to the side somewhere to make room for medicine and water and food. So, but again, yep. But again, thanks everybody. So lots of fundraisers out there. Just Google for fundraisers, you know, if you want to donate and experience something for your donation. All right. Well, it looks like unless you've got any other, I can't think of anything else.
No.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and see about getting into some weird news there,
weird
Bob.
Weird news.
I don't have any health news today, so.
That's okay. You've been real busy with everything you've been doing, and I can understand. I mean, you know, it goes back to how can you tell Sifu Rusty's lying? Oh, she said, I'll call you back. And I know Deb Evans is listening, and I know she knows what I'm talking about. If Sifu Rusty ever says, I'll call you back, don't believe it.
It won't happen. Yeah, it won't happen. It won't happen. I was on the phone with Master Tony Ao all day yesterday trying to, like, get stuff going and trying to figure stuff out with Master Andy Wilson. My gosh, you know, and my own classes. It's like, ah. So, all right, what do we got for weird news?
Well, I've heard of companies doing this. Tow truck companies, if you're belligerent with them, if you're threatening, you know what, your tow prices go up, they can actually tack on a fee for being belligerent, being angry, yelling. This one is really interesting because it specifically says that Mahogany Grandison was charged $150 cursing fee.
What?
And of course, yeah, and of course she denies it. You or I, if we were getting our fee would be double that. Okay.
Yeah, right. So she got she got fined for cursing.
Yes, she got fined for cursing, and
that's
the guy
crazy.
Called a police report. Oh, completely.
Yeah.
It's a story that will make you say WTF. Yeah.
Yeah.
A woman's potty mouth led to her being charged an extra $150 from a towing company that removed her car from illegal parking. And that also kills me. Why are you so mad? You parked illegally, somebody calls you on it, and there goes your car.
You know, I worked for a towing company for a while, and people get so pissed off. Doesn't matter that they're parked illegally. People will get pissed off, and God forbid if you tell them how much it's going to cost to get their car out of impoundment. I had to quit. I couldn't handle it anymore.
And if they catch you when the car's up in the air and they haven't left yet, it's like, I don't know, $150 drop fee or $250 when they get to the yard, plus $300 a day for storing. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, but people get pissed, and they will pull baseball bats on your happy butt. They will. And, you know,
nice
one of the reasons
gun.
I had to. Yeah. It's like, I can't do this anymore. This is crazy. So,
right. Well, she was visiting a friend in Huntsville, Alabama, and parked in an illegal spot. She and others were towed away, but when it came time to settle up, she was charged $350, while the others were only billed $200.
Whoa.
Wow. That probably just set her off even more.
Yeah, right? Oh, my
Daniel
God.
Daniel Bradford, owner of Affordable Towing, blamed the extra $150 on Grandison's language and behavior. Which
Affordable Towing?
Said, yeah, I know. I thought I'd start laughing.
Affordable Towing, okay.
He said when with her attitude and anger and cursing, she crossed the line.
Mm-hmm.
She was threatening, cussing, saying she was going to do this and do that. He said the Los Angeles Times reported, well, with all the harassment we had to do something. Grandison says he never did what the towing service claims. So basically, she denies everything. You know, deny everything, admit nothing, demand proof. That's
right.
The guy's credo. That's the male credo.
Do something wrong and now you want proof.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I explained multiple times it was not me. I even apologized for the person who did curse them out. So she's saying it was somebody else. She's saying it wasn't her.
Oh.
They were not hearing it. Grandison and said, according to OKCFox.com, basically bottom line, because we're running overtime, is, you know, if you're going to make a mistake, own up to it. Don't blame it on anybody else. And don't curse the tow truck driver, because you will get charged for it.
You will.
Wow.
You will. And you know, we've had several people come to our tow company that I used to work at and, you know, threaten to smash my head with a baseball bat. You know, we had bulletproof glass up and stuff like that. I've had knives and brass knucks pulled on me and stuff like that. And, you know, we will call the police, and the police will haul your ass away. So
that's right.
Watch yourself, you know. But I had to quit. Okay. I just couldn't handle it anymore. Let's move on to the weird laws.
Weird laws, real quickly. Belgium, a driver who turns through oncoming traffic has the right of way unless he slows down or stops. So you can jump on the gas, turn in front of people, and it's okay. But if you slow down or stop in front of them, that's when you can get in trouble. Greece, all electronic games are banned. Holland,
it is illegal
to smoke pot, but if you have less than 5 grams with you, wait, let me read that again. It is illegal to smoke pot, buy it, or have less than 5 grams with you.
Oh, Holland?
I still read that wrong, and I apologize. It is legal, because I'm so used to saying the word illegal on these things.
Yeah.
It's actually legal to smoke pot, it's legal to buy it, and it's legal to have less than 5 grams with you. So
right.
It's not like the law in Seattle where you can smoke it, you can have an ounce with you, but you can't buy it.
Yeah.
You can't go into a dispensary. Because you still need a marijuana card.
Exactly. Until next year. Until next year, we're planning on actually having basically government-run, state-run dispensaries and stuff like that. It's going to be interesting when that happens. Gee whiz. All right.
In Holland, prostitution is legal, but the prostitutes must pay taxes like any other business.
Okay.
Norway, licenses must be bought in order to own television sets and even VCRs. You know, my kids, I don't even think they remember what a VCR is.
Yeah.
That's like saying, I got this old Beta player, want it? No.
Yeah. Or I've got an LP.
Or like you, reel to reel.
Yeah. All right, dude.
In Norway. Do you guys remember the old Price is Right? I mean, the program's still on, but Bob Barker's retired.
But at
the end of every show, he used to say, spay or neuter your animals, control the pet population. Well, in Norway, you may not spay your female dog or cat.
Whoa. Wow.
I guess you can neuter the male.
Oh, okay.
That sounds like marriage.
I love it.
That is the end of my weird laws. We should go on to a break, I guess, and then call our very special guest, Superfoot Wallace.
Yes. All right. So we'll be back in about three and a half minutes right after this with our special guest, Bill Superfoot Wallace.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn.
Hello?
Is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better. And kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. If you're just now tuning in, this is the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show with Restita and Robert. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699, and our special guest today is Bill Superfoot Wallace. So to get the show, the rest of the show rolling, I'd like to turn the mic over to Sifu Robert Deal, who will bring on our guest and introduce.
Thank you. You know, in the entertainment field, they called, I just lost my train of thought. I apologize.
That sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Well, I was thinking about what happened to you, sir, and I just lost it. Please.
Well, it's been really nice talking to you. Talk to you guys pretty soon. Give me a call later on, okay?
No, please don't be welcome to the show. I am very pleased to announce Mr. Bill.
Get it right this time. Get it right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, get on with it, Bob. You just made us look crappy.
Hey, well, it's Sunday, so what the heck? It's Sunday.
I like that excuse. I do. But go ahead, Bob.
I'm not.
You know, giving you guff there, buddy.
Something about that train of thought, I guess.
That derailed. But no, go ahead, buddy. We're just playing with you, buddy. Because, you know, I'd expect you guys to give me crap if I did that.
Hey, it's still young. We're going to give you crap all day.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah.
Sounds fun.
Okay. All right, take two. All right, back to you, Bob.
Maybe drive a car. Forget the train of thought. Just drive a car.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Maybe I'll start with the train of thought. I don't know. You can chime in, or you want to start with take three, Bob.
No, that's go ahead.
Okay, we're having a whole bunch of fun here, folks, on the Dynamic Dojo. So if you just tuned in and you never tuned in before, our show is known for having fun. Unlike, you know, interview shows, it can be kind of dry and stuff like that. You know, we bring on guests to have fun with us and just kind of sit back and kick back and stuff like that. And we couldn't think of a better guest to relax with us on a Sunday afternoon than Bill Superfoot Wallace. Now, for those of you that are new to martial arts and are not familiar with Mr. Wallace, Mr. Wallace was a competitor to be reckoned with in the 70s and 80s during his career in full contact karate. In fact, his name was one that I admired when I was a kid taking karate.
Watch it now.
I was a teenager.
Oh, thanks. So I just say when you were younger. I'll settle for when you were younger.
When I was younger, yeah, when I was younger.
Thank you.
And,
thank you very
yeah,
much.
Yeah, there we go. And, you know, just a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, it is our pleasure and honor to have Mr. Bill Superfoot Wallace on the show. Thanks for joining us, Sensei Bill.
Well, I don't know if I should thank you or not, but I'll let you know later on.
Oh, my goodness. So for our listeners out there, our phone number is 347-677-0699. If you've got any questions for Sensei Bill Wallace.
You haven't even talked to me yet. How can I have any questions? You haven't even talked to me
you
yet.
Bet. You bet. Oh, man, you know, you'd be surprised. You know, sometimes we get people that start calling in even before we get a guest on. And I'm like, what, really? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my
sure,
goodness.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah. What we'd like to do first, Sensei Bill, is, you know, just to give the listeners a little bit of a background on your martial arts. You know, how did you get started in martial arts and all that other great stuff? So if we could get your take on that, that would be great.
Oh, you want me to talk now, huh?
Yes, sir.
Your turn. Okay. Well, I was a wrestler in high school and college. When I joined the service with my best friend at the time, I wanted to continue wrestling a little bit, but when I got to my permanent station, they didn't have a wrestling team, but they had these funny-looking little guys walking around with white suits throwing each other all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, what is this stuff called? And they said, it's called judo. And I said, oh, that sounds like fun. Can I try it? And he says, yeah. So I wrestled with the instructor, and you know, I took the instructor down a couple times and pinned him a couple times. Then he said, well, why don't you put this little white suit on? Put this little white coat on. And I put this little white coat on. I said, well, let's try it again. Jesus. I bounced all over the place. I was you might say I was on flying status for a certain length of time.
Oh.
And, so I fell in love with it and started playing judo really good for a while. And then I was out in California training for California State Nationals, or California State Championship, excuse me, at Norton Air Force Base. And we're just training, working out for it. And I was working out with a guy. At that time, I weighed about 150 pounds. And the guy I was working out weighed about 180, 185 pounds, something like this, which was stupid of me. But anyway, we kept doing it. And I came in for a throw, and he tried to counter the throw. So I went through his legs with a throw called Ouchigari, which is a leg trip type thing. And he just collapsed and fell right on my leg and tore the medial ligament on my right knee. So that took care of my judo career for a while, for a long time, matter of fact, forever. But anyway, I was in a cast, and I went downtown with a friend, and they had this karate school downtown. And the guy says, you do karate? And I says, well, no. And he says, you do karate now? And I said, well, I can't. I have a cast on my leg. And he says, no problem. You do yokogeri. And I said, what is yokogeri? He says, saide kika. So I said, okay. So I, you know, ended up with my right leg was in the cast. I threw about 13,000 side kicks. And then he says, okay, now we do mawashigeri. Now we do mawashigeri, which is with the front leg. He says, roundhouse kick. And I said, okay. So I did another 15,000 roundhouse kicks, again, with the left leg because I couldn't pivot. I couldn't turn. So I just ended up throwing side kicks and roundhouse kicks for about the next, 2 months, 3 months, something like that. And that's how my karate career started happening.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. My goodness. Now, what got you interested in getting into the PKA, into competitive karate?
Well, I was
Well, you know, when I got back to the United States, I was in Okinawa with the mm-hmm. United States Air Force. When I came back, they didn't have karate tournaments over there at the time. Mm-hmm. And when I came back, they had a tournament. They had a tournament in Santa Ana, California. So I said, okay. Some guy said, we're going to go to the tournament. I said, okay. So we go to the karate tournament. And just with my knowledge at the time, I took second place. Mm-hmm. And I went, wow, this sounds a lot of fun, because all I could do was kick with my left leg and, you know, and throw a back fist at the time, because that I still, you know, was the injury happened in November, and this was February the 1st that the tournament was. Mm-hmm. So I just started competing and was really, really enjoyable. And won the Nationals about 3 years in a row. And just love the competing. Just, you know, it's fun just to compete and spar around all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in 74, Mike Anderson and Joe Lewis called me up, and they said, hey, we're going to have a kickboxing tournament, a karate tournament in Los Angeles, and we picked you as our middleweight. You're our team. And I said, oh, okay, that's fine, because that's our middleweight anyway. And he says, okay, but you don't understand, Bill. And I says, what? He says, we're going to go full contact. We're going to go to the knockout. I said, well, you guys have a wonderful time. You enjoy the hell out of this. I'll just stand here on the side and watch you guys beat the shit out of each other.
Exactly, right?
Because, well, you know, to me, competition with that time was fun. I never claimed to be Billy Bad Butt. I never claimed to be the bad dude in the whole, you know, the toughest guy on the block or whatever it is. I just liked the competition. He says, now we're actually going to really hit each other and try to knock each other out. I says, no, you have fun. And they talked 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 and threatened me and all that stuff. Finally, I said, okay, I'll try it. And I tried it, and hey, found out it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
That's
so
pretty cool.
And it was fairly successful at it, so, you know.
Well, I mean, fairly successful. I mean, I think it was, what, 23 wins, and I don't think any losses, if I remember correctly.
Nope. I got lucky.
Wow, and 12 KOs. I mean, wow. I mean, you fought, like, legends like Ray McCollum and Steve Mackey, Pat Worley, I mean, Blinky Rodriguez and stuff like that. Just incredible. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I was scared to death, too, by the way. No, you have to be. You know, when you're competing like that, you have to be afraid. You have to, because all it takes is, you know, because I was the champion, most of my fights were on national television. And mm-hmm. the guys I had to fight were all top-notch fighters. I didn't get a bum of the month club, you know, like a lot of boxers get. So my guys that I fought all had to be really, really good physical condition. So they all had the ability to knock me out. And, you know, that's gotta wear on your mind after a while, that just one shot can put you in, you know, can paralyze you, can kill you, can knock you out, you know. And, you know, you just have to think about that as you're training for it. And be prepared mm-hmm. for it.
Exactly. Wow, that's pretty cool. And sorry, Bob, I'm like just hogging all the questions and stuff like that.
That's okay. I started to talk, but my mic was muted. Sensei, you hear stories all the time. After you fought Blinky, I heard a story that said, "What was it like?" And you answered, "You had a new respect for the jab." Is that true? No, I had a new respect for his left hook, let me tell you. the jab, too, because the jab kind of worked for me to keep him away from me, because, you know, Blinky was a very, very aggressive fighter. And mm-hmm. and my kicks, I had really, really good kicks, but every once in a while, you know, he jammed the kick and tried to get inside, so I'd use the jab to keep him away from me. And that's where I find out that the jab works really, really well to keep people away from you. But he hit me with a left hook. That I saw all these Guamanians floating all over the place, and it hurt. You know, luckily, you know, I mean, not luckily, but you know, I didn't go down or anything like that. I was stunned just a little bit, but I didn't go down. So, you know, got lucky.
Wow.
And I came back. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I read yesterday that your front round kick was actually measured mm-hmm. at 60 miles an hour.
Well, as long as the guy didn't block it, I was thrilled. You know, as long as the guy didn't block it, I was happy.
Well, I have a question about your... Oh, go ahead, Bob.
No, I fight with each other. Go ahead.
You better yours first ding, because ding, mine's ding, embarrassing.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay. No, I've always known you that for having that like hella fast round kick and a hook kick. And did you go through
kick?
A process?
A hook kick? Kick? Oh, a hook kick. Okay. I thought you meant foot kick. Okay.
Hook kick. And you know, did you have to go through a process of deciding which kicks worked best for you, or
no,
you know,
I had
did,
no choice.
Did you find out?
I had no choice. Mm-hmm. See, my right knee was bad. I had a mm-hmm. terrible right knee. And, you know, back then, when I hurt the knee, there was no such thing as arthroscopic surgery. It was called
mm-hmm.
exploratory
mm-hmm.
back in the 60s. So they didn't have the arthroscopic surgery. So I either had to get my knee totally cut open and worked on, or put it in a cast and just kind of hope for the best.
Mm.
So what happened is that I started working out with the kicking. And if you think about it, when you're sparring with an opponent, you have basically three angles. The one coming straight in, which is like a jab.
Mm-hmm.
The one coming around one side, and the one coming around the other side. So basically, you know, straight in, around, and a hook. So
mm-hmm.
my side kick was my jab. My roundhouse kick was my left hook. And my right hook was my hook kick. So all three angles were covered. And that, yeah,
very
that's
cool.
What, and I had no choice. That's what I had to do.
And that's very cool because, you don't meet very many people that think in terms of using their feet like their hands and applying them exactly and actually throwing them as fast as hands. And, you know, that's incredible. A lot of people just kick just because. You know.
Well, yeah, but you know, when I was a wrestler. Hold on, just one second.
Okay.
My dogs were with me. I had to pick him up on the chair, but that's my buddy. But as I was a wrestler in high school and college, I was a leg wrestler. I was a scissor man, which means I would use my legs to tie people up in knots and, you know, do figure fours and Roman candles and guillotines and things like this. So when I started doing martial arts, including judo, I wanted to use my legs doing the throws. And
mm-hmm.
when I started doing karate training, I wanted to kick. I figured, you know, if I wanted to box, I would have got into boxing. But I really, really enjoyed the kicking. So I had to come up with some kicks that would work for me to do the majority of the techniques, which is the side kick, which keeps you away, and this is my straight-in technique. The roundhouse kick, which is my speed kick, which comes around. And then the hook kick, which is also comes around the other way, but it's also a great counter because you can come
mm-hmm.
charging in. I just lean back, hide behind the leg, and stick the leg up and hook it.
Mm-hmm.
And hook kick. So, you know, the same thing that you do with your forward hand, I try to do with my forward leg. Try.
Incredible. That's awesome. Wow. Oh, back to you, Bob, because I talked over you earlier. Sorry, bro.
That's okay. I'm used to it by now. Well, there was a time when you were fighting, you suffered multiple injuries over the years, but there was one injury specific, and I was going to have Sifu Rusty ask this question because I thought it was just funny, but I decided not to. You had suffered an injury during a fight and showed this injury to football legend Jim Brown at the first UFC where you were also a commentator. Could you explain the injury and what you actually showed Jim Brown?
Oh, no, I didn't show him anything. Probably it was either the knee or well, you know what it was? I remember now. it's on radio, so I probably can't see it. But anyway,
yeah.
I was fighting, watch it. I was fighting in a tournament in 1972 in Jackson, Tennessee. And I was fighting, I won the heavyweight division, and a guy named Sal Militello won the lightweight division, so we fought for the grand championship. And we fought for the grand championship, and I was ahead of him about 7-0, something like this. And not wanting to look really bad or anything like that, so I started going real easy towards the end of the fight. And he threw a hard, hard spinning back kick. So, you know, rather than blocking and countering or whatever the case would be, I just kind of half-heartedly brought my knee up to jam it.
Mm-hmm.
And the spinning back kick came around me and caught me right in the crotch. Caught me right in the crotch. And you know, it hurt like hell, but it didn't go down, and it didn't really, at that time, seem to do any damage. And then I'm standing there. I win the championship, and I'm standing with the trophy, and they're taking pictures and doing an interview and everything. And I'm going, you know what? My stomach is absolutely killing me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I said, hold on a minute. So I go in the bathroom, and I drop my pants, and my crotch, my groin, is swelled up about the size of a softball, and it's just black as the ace of spades. And I go, uh-oh. So I go back to the tournament promoter. I says, you guys better take me to the hospital. I think we have a problem. And so they took me there on Saturday night. I spent Sunday in the hospital in ice because I had to try to get the swelling down. And then Monday, they operated and took out my left testicle in pieces. It had been smashed. That's why the left leg moves so good. There's no weight over there hanging it down now. And that's the story I'm sticking with, so I don't care what you say.
That's awesome. But oh my gosh, I mean that kind of injury. I'm sitting here with my legs crossed, going, I can't imagine. Oh my god.
You'll never have that problem. You will never have that problem.
No.
I hope I hope not.
I can't imagine that kind of pain, and I'm sure the guys out there are crossing their legs going, oh my god. But wow. And
most guys sometime or other have been kicked in the crotch. You know, right. and it's just, you know, it's really painful. But, you know, ironically enough, I talked to the doctor. And because I'm a kicker, I wouldn't wear a cup or anything like that because it's just too conforming, too binding. And I asked the doctor. I says, would have had the same problem if I had been wearing a cup. He says, if you'd worn a cup, you'd have probably lost both of them because just the angle that it hit and everything else, their cup would have probably ripped both of them out as opposed to just smashing one. So I go, okay. So I'm happy with that part of it.
That's a good point, actually, with the cup. Because, like my own students, they sometimes get a little overconfident when they wear a cup. And then all it takes is just that, even just a little backhand slap at the right angle, then they're on the ground.
Yeah.
It's like,
And then the opposite of that, you can get nailed hard, you know, with your front kick or with an instep kick or something like that. And they go, hey, good shot. And nothing happens. And you go, hold it now. How can the little flap do it? And the kaboom not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's weird how that works. Now, just out of curiosity, is the PKA still
in existence? It's still around. Joe Corley is running it now. Joe Corley in Atlanta, Georgia is still running the PKA. It's kind of on a hiatus right now, simply because, you know, the fights are going on and everybody's so in tune with this UFC stuff.
Right.
But you know, the kickboxing is still coming around too. So just not as much on television now. You just don't hear because it's not so much on television. Besides, I'm not doing it anymore, so why should it? No, I'm just kidding. But I'm just kidding. But it's still around. It's still popular. It just, you know, most of us just hear about the UFC stuff now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of UFC and a lot of people tend to forget the history that goes behind it. You know, in fact,
well,
I met a kid the other day.
We did UFC before it was UFC.
Exactly. Right. That's kind of the point that I wanted to make to some of the younger folk, because I met a kid the other day that thought that, you know, the UFC was the end-all be-all, which, you know, and they're entitled to that opinion. But then, you know, a lot of younger people today forget the history that goes with it, you know, even the arts in the early 1900s that were already, you know, doing MMA type stuff, what we would know as MMA today. And, you know, I guess my point I'm trying to make to these younger kids is like, hey, you know, don't forget.
People believe what they see. People believe what they hear. With all the stuff that's on the television now, especially with the UFC and the advertising and all this and all that, what they don't understand is these guys' careers aren't going to last very long. Because with all the punishment that they take, you know, there's no breaks. You know, if you hit me and knock me down, you can jump on top of me and hit me 15 more times before the referee jumps in there.
Right.
Well, you know, that doesn't help my head at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and a lot of times people don't realize that the mats that they fight on are soft. They have to be soft. I'm not taking anything away from there, but the mats have to be soft because if I pick you up and drop you on the back of your neck,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a pancake or a souffle, something like this, you're going to hit the back of your neck on that hard floor and break your neck. But
mm-hmm.
if it's nice and soft, now it just dings a little bit, and it looks really good. So they have to be able to protect the fighters like that, and the mats have to be fairly soft. That's why you're seeing more kicking, but not as much as you would normally think you would see because of the, you know, of the trauma that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Now you guys used to fight just in. A regular boxing ring floor, right? The sprung floor.
Yes,
no
yep.
mats, no nothing from, you know.
We fought on concrete floors.
Yeah.
We fought on
yeah.
concrete. And sweeps, takedowns, throws were allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, and you look back and you go, boy, were we dumb. We did all that for a trophy.
Yeah,
wow.
yeah. Me and Sifu Bob are reminiscing right now, going, oh hell no. In fact, we've got a couple of old school karate people on the chat board right now, and they're probably nodding their head, going, the mats? What the hell are those?
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Protective equipment.
And we didn't wear equipment. You know, somebody might tape their hands. You know, just so they don't break a knuckle when they punch in the face. But, you know, there were no safety equipment. There was no headgear. There was no, you know, no foot protection, no shin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very few people wore shin guards. You just went out there and you banged, you know. And
mm-hmm.
and ironically enough, if you think about it, you know, there wasn't that many injuries. We had very, very good control.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because we knew if we messed up, the other guy was going to nail us, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the amount of strategy, too, you know, it differs nowadays. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from, like, you know, BJJ or anything, because the level of strategy that is needed for BJJ is incredible. But as far as, you know, stand-up fighting, you know, it's a little different, you know, how people spar now than how it was. Because you had no protective gear, shin guards, you know. I mean, what's
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, most fights don't end up on the ground, you know. They don't last long enough to end up on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's street fights, you know, don't happen. You know, you're not going to push me and I'm not going to push you back. You're going to look at me and I'm going to look at you. And somebody's going to say, come on, come on. And all of a sudden somebody's just going to nail somebody. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't have a chance to do a double leg takedown. You don't have a chance to do, you know, a lot of the throws and the chokes and the arm bars that you would normally see in BJJ or UFC simply because it's not going to last that long. I'm not going to tell you I'm going to punch you. I'm going to say, hey, sorry, bam, you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and that's the way most fights happen. And if you look at it, you know, look at the number one takedown in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. What is it? It's a double leg takedown, which is
double
the
leg,
first takedown
right.
you learn. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's the first takedown you learn in wrestling. This is the very first takedown you learn in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Now you've fought a long list of great martial artists, you know, like Joe Louis and Blanky Rodriguez, of course, and Ray McCollum. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your most memorable fights?
Oh, every one of them were memorable. Every one of them. I can tell you the point match that I fought in, who I fought, what time I fought, the score of the fight, and what I hit him with and what he hit me with. Just simply
Whoa.
Because of my fights were strategy. I didn't go, here goes. You know, I didn't, you know, most
mm-hmm.
times you bow in, you stand, you go, okay, one, two, here goes. But
mm-hmm.
I because I only had one leg and one arm, basically, you know, my competition days, I had to create an opening. I had to make you defend. I had to make you react somehow. So that was the fun part of it too. I didn't mind winning 2-1 or 1-0. You know, I didn't. These scores that now are 7-6 or 8-5 or you know, those are ridiculous. Because if I score 8 shots on you and you score 5 on me, what if your 5 are harder than my 8?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you go, whoa! But if I hit you once and you don't hit me at all, I win. So I like that part
mm-hmm.
of it.
Very cool. Very cool. Most people don't remember the fights.
Yeah, oh, I
What's
do.
That?
I do. I do. I, you know, people don't usually know what they set something up, but they just know it. They don't know how the guy blocked. They don't know how the guy reacted to it. And I can tell you every time, mm-hmm. my job is to get you to react. Because when you react somewhere, there's an opening.
Mm-hmm. Very awesome.
And all I got to do is find it. And all I got to do is find mm-hmm. it.
Exactly. Awesome. All right. And for our listeners out there, our phone number is 347-677-0699. We're speaking with Bill Superfoot Wallace. If you'd like to call in and talk live with Mr. Wallace, give us a call. We've also got a chat board on the Blog Talk Radio marquee. Just scroll down underneath the show marquee there and type in your questions. We've got some people on the chat board, so feel free to ask some questions. All right, back to you, Sifu Bob, for any of your questions.
Well, Sensei, you were training some really notable celebrities. Can you tell us about them? And what were they training for? Were they training as the martial aspect? Were they training for the physical aspect? And I do have a question I read on Wikipedia yesterday about you. And you never know who wrote this stuff. Was it true that you were the one, and I hate to even bring this up, were you the one who found John Belushi?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I see. Yep. None of us knew that until I read it yesterday.
Well, you know, it's not something that you want to kind of put out there very much. You know, I was working with John. We had done two films. We'd done Continental Divide and we'd done Neighbors. And I was working on a third film with him called Noble Rot. It's about a fungus that grows on grapes out there up in the San Francisco area. And it was supposed to be a really good drama-type thriller. And we were working on the film when I was working out with him. And then I was taking a typewriter over to him when he was at the Chateau Maman. And knocked on the door, and he wasn't. I didn't hear an answer, so I have a key, and I got inside and found him.
Wow! Mm. Now who else were you training
day.
Back with? What were
well,
you? Who
worked,
else were you
I worked
training?
With Danny Aykroyd. I worked with Danny a little bit when we did Neighbors. I worked with Danny when we did the Blues Brothers tour. I worked with Danny. I used to work out with Elvis Presley a little bit. Worked out with Dolph Lundgren. Worked out with. Bunch of guys. Philip Ree, the guy that did Best of the Best. Mm. We used to train together and spar together all the time when we were at June Chung's in Los Angeles. Just all kinds of guys. Had an absolute ball. Worked out with the top fighters in the country. Worked out with the top fighters in the world. Dominic Valera, Ferdinand Mack. All a bunch of guys all over the world. Had an absolute ball. I've had a blessed life.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is so awesome. That is some incredible people. Now I know Dolph Lundgren. He was a Thai boxer.
No. He was a Kyokushin Kai guy. He was the Swedish national champion in Kyokushin.
Oh wow!
And he
wow,
was a hell
I didn't
of a
know
fighter.
That.
Oh yeah, hell of a fighter, a really good guy, and a really 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 good kicker.
Yeah, I remember a story from Rocky IV where he actually broke Sylvester Stallone's ribs because Sly Stallone actually asked that big man to kick him, and he did, and he had to fly down from Vancouver to L.A. and spend some time in Cedars-Sinai.
Probably get it fixed. Yeah, he's a big old guy too, but very flexible and a good and really really nice person. Really nice person. I enjoyed messing around with Dolph.
Wow, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Cool. Yeah.
That's very
cool. Then I used to work out with Chuck every week. You know, when I was living out there, we used to work out with Chuck. We'd go over to our friend named Bob Wall. We would work mm-hmm. out, and Bob was getting over a rotator cuff injury. He had a surgery. So Chuck and I would go over there and work out with him three or four times a week and make him work out, and we would do the work out and everything else. Had a ball. Had a great time. From 1980 till 1993, 94, probably had a ball out there in L.A., just working out with everybody, meeting with Dolph and, you know, Philip Ree and working with everybody.
Very
wow.
Cool.
Very notable.
Then we have to grow up. Yep, then we have to grow
yeah.
up.
You know, I did see the fight yesterday on YouTube with you and Joe Lewis. What an exhibition fight where you tried to pick him up at the end where he knocked you down. You did you fell on your back and ended up almost in the front splits. It was a great fight.
The side splits. It was the side splits. I just rolled into the splits, you know. Yeah. So we had fun. The most memorable part of that whole fight to me was he came charging. I hit him right in the head with a counter hook kick, one of the best hook kicks I've ever thrown. And the son of a gun backs up and goes, ow.
And you're like, oh, what?
All he said was ow. And I said, sorry, didn't mean it. I apologize from the bottom of my heart.
Now, one of the commentators during that fight mentioned you were a talker to your opponent. I mean, I can't see you ever being a trash talker, but were you very vocal in your matches in the ring?
Oh, no, I didn't talk at all. It's kind of hard to talk when you got that mouthpiece stuck in your mouth. No, I would just smile all the time. You know, when I would do an exhibition, I would joke and laugh and say all kinds of silly, stupid stuff. but as far as trash talking, no, because you know I don't want to do any trash talking because what if the guy nails me? Mm-hmm. I look bad.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely.
So I wait till the end, wait till the very end, and then I'm sorry if I hit him.
Now you also what made you get bitten by the acting bug? I know you did quite a few films.
Mm-hmm. I did 15 films, only because when Chuck asked me to do a Force of One with him, I was living in Memphis, Tennessee at the time, and he was doing some things and he came down to Memphis to see me, and wanted to spar with me, and I said I'd love to spar with you, Chuck, because we'd never sparred before, and so we kicked everybody out of the school. And for about an hour and a half, we just beat the shit out of each other.
Wow.
And I've had an absolute ball. And then after that, he said, hey, he's going to do this movie next year called A Force of One. And he wouldn't know if I wanted to do the movie with him. And I said, well, at that time, I was getting ready to defend my title in Monte Carlo. It was in May, so I said, I'll tell you what, as soon as I get back from the fight, if I'm successful, I'll give you a call, and I'd love to come out. He says, okay. So I won my fight, got lucky again, but and I called Chuck, and I said, hey, I'd love to come and do the film. He says, okay. So I flew out, met with the producer, met with the director and all that stuff, and they said, okay, they want me to do the part. So I said, okay. So I went out there October 1978, and spent the next 4 months out there working on the film with Chuck. Met a lot of wonderful people, worked out, and had a ball.
Very cool. What's it like working on set with those people?
Not what you think. You know, I mean, you know, imagine it takes 3 months to do a film.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that film in an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine how much time is just absolutely wasted sitting around, waiting for the light change, waiting for, you know, things to go the right way, waiting for the people to set things up. And a lot of it is very, very, very boring.
Mm-hmm.
But most people remember their first film because everything is new and different. But after that, it gets old quick.
Mm-hmm. It does. I've only been an extra and stunt double for a few people, and it's a lot of hurry up and wait. And a lot of martial artists out there are like, oh, I want to be a martial arts film star and stuff like that, but then they forget it's a lot of hurry up and wait. And you know, you do have to make sure that, you know, especially if you're a stunt fighter, that you know your angles are correct and you know, that you hit your marks and, you know, and take after take after take, you know, 3-second scene taken all day. And people forget that. And, you know, that was one of the reasons why we asked about that.
the problem is what people don't understand, what stunt people don't understand, what extras and stunt fighters and people that are martial arts don't understand. If you're not the star of the film, your job is to make the star look good.
Exactly.
If you're gonna be in a fight scene with the star, no matter how good you are, no matter how tough you are, your job is to make the star look good. And if you don't make the star look good, that's your last job.
Exactly.
You know? So,
exactly.
So yeah, it is. You know, and when I did that movie with Jackie Chan, we did a movie called The Protector in 1984. Mm-hmm. I go all the way over to Hong Kong to do the film with him because he wanted me to come and be the bad guy. So I said, okay, and we're starting rehearsing the fight scene. He says, well, I think this fight should be nip and tuck all the way through. We should be close in. And I said, hold on, whoa, time out. What's your role, Jackie? He says, well, I'm a New York City policeman. I says, okay, what's my role? My role is I'm a retired world champion. Now, if I'm a retired world champion and you're just a normal, run-of-the-mill New York City cop, how can it be nip and tuck? How can it be a close fight at the start of it? You know, otherwise it makes me look terrible. So I said, probably what should happen is I should just beat the tar out of you for the first 45, 50 seconds, maybe the first minute of the fight. Then you do something. You know, I run into something or he puts something in the way and I throw a kick and you put something up and I hit it or something else to where it changes the tide and then you come on and win.
Mm-hmm.
So we rehearse that. Yeah, I like that. Okay, so that's what happened. And I get electrocuted at the end. I smoldered with the best of them.
Oh, that's right. I'm trying to remember. I was like trying to remember the scene when you were.
You're supposed to remember
that.
Yeah, we had the fight scene, and then I.
The electrocution part, yeah.
Watch it now. Watch it now.
That was a cool scene, though, and you know it does
make. Thank you very much. I'm laying on the ground smoldering. Thanks a lot.
That reminds me of that line in the map. Smoking.
Oh yeah.
Smoking.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep, I was well done.
That's awesome. And, you know, that's just another example of, you know, what, you know, has to go behind the scenes to make a good scene. And a lot of kids that want to be, you know, these, you know, Hong Kong movie stars and stuff like that just because they can kick or, you know, they can do tricks and stuff, they forego or forget all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And they quit.
What they don't understand is, again, you know, Hollywood doesn't want karate people that can act. Mm-hmm. They want actors that can do karate.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Because, you know, with all the computer stuff now that's out there, like Matrix, I mean, Keanu Reeves doesn't know how to do anything, but they made him look like he was absolutely fantastic in the fight scenes simply because of the computer generation. And that's what we need out there is to be able to start something and make it look good. And then sell the fight scene or sell the fights.
Mhm. Very cool. Very cool. What were some other film roles that you were in?
Oh, I died in all of them. First film I did was with Chuck called Force of One. Then I did a couple small budget films, Silent Assassins with a bunch of guys. Manchurian Avenger, did L.A. Street Fighters, did Power of One over in Zimbabwe, Africa, which was about a $45 million film.
Mm-hmm.
Did the fight choreography and the thing, did the fight scenes in the movie. Did The Protector, film over in Indonesia. I can't remember the name of it, though. Oh, it's hold on just a minute. I'll tell you what it is. What's the first film that Mel Gibson did? The police film, the cop film.
Oh,
Lethal Weapon?
Lethal Weapon, yeah.
Thank
Lethal
you.
Weapon. One I did over in Zimbabwe, in Indonesia, was with Chris Mitchum called Lethal Hunter. I was a bad guy. I get run over by a train. I get all kinds of stuff done to me, but I'm gonna be so good at dying when it comes time to actually doing it. I'm just gonna ask your man upstairs which way he wants me to go, and I'm ready because I practiced it. I know how to do it already.
Well, film. Wow, you know, films. Like, think of the most interesting and, you know, ways to like kill off kill off the bad guys in martial arts films.
I've been impaled. I've been electrocuted. I've had my neck broken. Been shot. I had my legs broken. And all kinds of good stuff. But it's fun. But you have a good time. You know, it's nerve wracking. It's nerve wracking. It's very time consuming. But the end result's very, very good. You know, it's like every movie that's out there has the potential to be an Oscar winner. Every mm-hmm. movie has the potential to be an Oscar winner. It's just how they cut the film, how they edit the film, the scenes that get, you know, the scenes that people like to see, just like those Patrick Swayze movies, Dirty Dancing, Ghost. You know, they're all basically not high-budgeted films, but there's a certain part of it that people absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people remember. That's what people keep coming back to see.
If you think
about it, then one of the number one films that Chuck did was Force of One. I mean, it's mm-hmm. still showing now. We did that 30-some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still showing on television now. I still get my 16-cent check, you know.
Very cool. Very cool.
Now, seriously, did you do any television roles?
No, I did Walker, Texas Ranger with Chuck. We did the last one. Joe Lewis, Don Wilson, myself, and Howard Jackson did Walker, Texas Ranger called? Oh, okay, yeah. It was called Legends.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, we had fun.
Now, I noticed on the first UFC, you were a commentator. Were you, did you commentate for a lot of fights?
No, just that one. Just the one UFC. I asked too many questions because me being a wrestler at the time, and I'm doing the interviews. I step up in the octagon, and you ever step on a crash pad? You know, in mm-hmm. gymnastics, the crash pads, how soft they mm-hmm. are. Well, that's what the first UFC mats were. And so if you're standing there trying to punch, you can't because you just sink. If you mm-hmm. try to kick, you can't because you just sink. It's great for doing a takedown on. It's great for rolling around because it's very, very soft. But as mm-hmm. far as being able to move forward or do anything, you just couldn't do it. And if you think about it also, how many, you know, sumo wrestlers, and that was the only wrestler that was out there, know how to punch and kick or choke an arm bar, and their job is just to throw you out of the ring. You can't. It's surrounded by chain link fence.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked too many questions, and you know, we didn't get along, which is okay.
Well, you know, I talked to one of the fighters one time from the original UFC, Zane Frazier, and
yep.
the man had asthma, and he was in the Mile High City.
Yep, and plus they blew smoke in his face as he walked out there.
Right, and he told them not to. They brought around the dry ice and the whole bit, and he was a mess. He said, "It was
After the first minute, he couldn't even breathe. So yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, basically the first one, and I did this in an interview with UFC people. The first several fights were 2-hour advertisements for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. That's basically
right.
what they were. No, think about it. That's what they were. You got all these guys standing trying to punch each
mm-hmm.
other, trying to kick each other, falling all over the place. Then you got Hoist Gracie comes out there and does a double leg takedown because nobody knew how to stop it. You does a double leg takedown, gets down here and chokes you out. No arm bars, just chokes you out.
Mm-hmm.
And when he chokes you out, no screaming, no hollering, no messiness or anything else, just all of a sudden the tap out and he's done.
Mm-hmm.
No sweating, no hard breathing, nothing like this. Just whoop. So it was a perfect. It was a perfect advertisement for Gracie Jiu-Jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. And then the second, I think it was the second or third, where Gracie fought Chimo, just got not beat out of him, and then but he still submitted Chimo, but then he retired. Great move.
Yep. Oh yeah. Sure. Because he was dead tired, all beat up. And the only reason Chimo lost was because he had that stupid old top knot, remember?
Right.
He had that big, long ponytail, and Hoist grabbed hold of the ponytail, kept him from falling over. Wow.
I'm gonna have to look at that old footage again.
Go play it back, and he grabbed Kimo's top knot, or I guess it's called a top knot, something like that, and that's what kept him from falling over. Wow. Yeah. Hell yeah. All kinds of silly little things that happened.
Very cool. I'm gonna have to look at that footage. That's cool. Because like, what number UFC are we at now?
Oh my god. 267, something like that. No, not that. 267, 460, I don't know, something like that. Who won the fight last night? I don't even know.
I don't even know either.
St. Pierre fought was some guy. Okay, yeah, that
matters. I think it was GSP that won. I'd have to double check because it was all over Facebook. People were like,
It's not St. Pierre, it's GSP, huh?
Yeah, that's what everyone's like calling him. GSP, gasp. I don't know. St. Pierre, say his name, folks.
If you're gonna call, only guy that died with it, the one name was Elvis. You know.
There you go. Yeah, Elvis and Madonna. I think that's it.
Yeah, but she only calls herself Madonna. His name was always Elvis Presley. You know.
Mhm.
You don't even know Madonna's last name.
I don't even know what it is. I think it's something Italian sounding. I don't know. Oh my goodness. Now you're still very active in the seminar circuit.
I travel all over. Doing the seminars, having a ball. Yep.
Very cool.
I just came back from Saskatchewan. I was in England for 2 weeks. I just came back from Wisconsin. Go to Indiana this next weekend, and then I go to Norway for 5 days.
Wow!
And go up to Boston. Yeah, I love it. It keeps me off the streets, and I really enjoy the working out.
That's awesome.
I do the seminars, and I get just as much of a workout as everybody else gets because I do all the flexibility, do all the kicking, do all the combinations. Keeps me off
Very
the streets.
Cool.
Keeps me young at heart anyway.
That's awesome. Now, do the seminar hosts ask for some particular subject in particular?
We'll talk about it. You know, like if I've done some for them before, we'll still do the flexibility, still do kicking, then we'll do some of the kickboxing aspect of it, some of the boxing skills that are involved, some of the combinations that are involved with the punching stuff, you know, because, you know, kickboxing punching is a lot different than karate punching.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't think it is, but it totally is, because karate punching, that one shot, one kill type stuff we think about, that one reverse punch will kill you. Well, we found out in the kickboxing aspect of it, also in the MMA stuff, that that's not always true. So we have to work on combinations, work on different movements that create all kinds of openings and all kinds of knockdowns and combinations involved.
Very cool. Very cool. I'll be sure to get your contact information for our listeners out there that might want to host you.
Superfund.com. Just superfund.com. Okay. Easy
Got
way
it.
To get a hold of me. Yeah.
Superfund.com.
Great. Well, since we do have a caller, we have a friend of mine on the line, Miles Bonner. Can you take a call?
I don't see why not.
Let me bring him live. Miles, you are on Live with Superfund. Go ahead.
Hey, Cole. Hey, Bill. Thank you very much for taking my call. Honored to talk to you. I had a question. You just mentioned about all your activity, and I understand that you had a hip replacement. I've been
three of them
for about a year now, and kind of trying to do other things to not do that, but wondering what your take is on the hip replacement thing.
Well, I've had three of them. I had the left one replaced twice, and I had the right one replaced once. Because of what we do, our hips just can't take some of the pressure that we put on it. Especially with the flexibility and the stress that we put on the joints and so forth, especially in the legs, because of the stance that we take, the power and the kicks that we throw, the speed that we throw, things like this. So a lot of times the joints just can't handle it. You've had the replacement, or you're going to have one?
I was cleared for one. I'm trying to avoid it, but maybe
get it done. Get it done because I'm 68 years old now, and I am enjoying absolutely no pain at all. Nothing hurts. Absolutely nothing hurts. And I can stretch just as much as I've ever stretched. I can kick just as easy and just as fast as I could ever kick. You know, and just remember, the joint that they took out is worse than the one they're going to put in. The one that they put in is a great joint. So, and if you're put down with pain, you're going to compensate for it other ways. Your knee will go bad or your other hip will go bad, something like this. Your spine will go bad. So get the replacement. It's better for you.
Very good. Yeah, I am feeling it in the knee now as well. So.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so, hey, thank you for the advice.
You're right. Get it fixed.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Miles. And for anyone else that wants to call and speak to Sensei Bill Wallace, our phone number here
is
347. It's Sunday.
I'm hurt. Nobody wants to talk to me.
No, like I'm getting a bunch of messages on Facebook with people
sure
going, "Look,
oh,
this is cool.
Yeah.
I'm listening. Blah blah blah
yeah,
and stuff
yeah,
like that."
Yeah.
It's just us right now. Just yeah. But anyway, 347-677-0699. Come on, folks. We've only got about half an hour left on the air, and when it's done, it's done. You missed out, so feel free to call in if you'd like. It's Sundays have always been our Achilles heel, since they built, because it's kind of like that was the only day that I had free.
It's just Bill. It's not Sensei Bill. It's just Bill. Make
all
me
right,
feel
Bill.
Old when you call me Sensei, because I'm not
oh,
teaching
sorry.
Anybody. You're not teaching it, so you just call me Bill or Mr. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. It's either one. I don't care, you know.
All
oh,
right.
Crap.
We'll call him Mr. W. No, force of habit. You know how it goes.
no problem at all.
Well, you know, you and I met each other in 08. We were inducted into the Masters Hall of Fame because, of course, you were the guest speaker there. And I had nothing but nice things to say about you. My favorite memory was when you were walking down the line, you grabbed some guy out of the line and just kissed him on the cheek.
Was he cute?
I guess so.
It must have been really, or smelled good or something like that. I don't know. Watch it now. I heard that.
Rim shot. Oh my goodness, that's awesome. And you know, it's this is something that me and Bob talk about a lot. In that, you know, we love having guests on that just like to have fun and to be real, you know, on the air. Because you know, me, I don't know how to put this. Me and Bob have this thing about, you know, egotistical people.
Well, you have to understand something. Here, think about this. 95% of the people that take martial arts, why do they take martial arts? They were picked on as a kid, or they want to learn how to beat somebody up. Not just beat somebody up, but they want to learn some sneaky, easy, mystical way about beating somebody up. They just don't want to put the gloves on and beat the shit out of each other. They want to do something mystical, neat, to where you can't see it and you don't know what I'm doing. I'm just all of a sudden, and you fall over, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, that's what they want. Now, you have to realize they might learn this. They might be very, 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 very good at it. But it's still, the ego is kind of down the tubes a little bit because they've been picked on as a kid or something like this, or they've been beat up a couple of times. So as much as they learn martial arts, they still have that ego problem. They still have that insecurity, you might say, because mm-hmm. we might learn confidence, but you can't teach it to me. I have to learn it. And mm-hmm. it's harder to learn than you think it is. Just because I can punch really good and I can kick really, it doesn't mean I'm a tough fighter. And I, you know, just because I can punch real good, I can kick real good, doesn't mean I have that confidence. It means I can learn it because now I have things going for me. But again, you know, most people that know all this stuff, you know, how many professors, you know, that walk down the street want to be called professor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my name is Professor Bob. My name is Dr. Bob. No, you know, you're Bob to me. You're Jim. You're Ralph. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have all kinds of quote-unquote grandmasters that I'm friends with. And they say, well, Bill, you know, I would really like you to call me grandmaster of this and master of
that.
Whoa! But, you know, and wow. I say, well, this, you know, because hold it. You can call me Bill, and I have to call you Grandmaster. Now, there's only one person in the world that I know that I can't whip, and that's my father. And I never called him Master. I never called him Grandmaster. So, you know, this is just my views. I'm sorry, guys, but I'll call you Mr. Bob or Mr. George or Master this or Master, but not Grandmaster. I mean, when I started in the Shorin Ryu system back in 63, there was only Sensei. There was not Master this. There was not Grandmaster that. That came about with the Korean aspect of the Taekwondo movement, because once you make a fourth dan, you're a master. And, you know, and now the Japanese have caught on to it a little bit. They be calling, you know, first of all, you're a Seisan, then you're a Hanchi, then you're we all kick and punch at the same time, and if we take our belts off, nobody can tell the difference anyway.
That's right. That's right. And thank you so much for putting it out there, because I'm a firm believer in that, you know, yeah, you can earn a rank, but you really can't earn status. And you have to earn that status, exactly. And I know Bob feels the same way. And all of the guests that we've had on the talk show feel the same way. And, you know, we just love it when people like yourself and everybody else that have been on the show are just real and just love to have fun. In fact, one time I was called out by someone that's like, oh my gosh, you know, you guys are really disrespectful. And, you know, and I just wanted to say, did you listen to the show? You know, did you listen to all of it? Because it was a very respectful show, but we just happened to have fun. And I think, you know, a lot of what clouds a lot of martial arts is the, you know, I'm grandmaster, grand poobah, professor, doctor, so-and-so, and you know, people walking around thinking that, you know, that I can't believe that someone, like, told you to call him a grandmaster.
Well, it's just kind of funny, you know. I have, doing what I do, I have a lot of experience, and in the competition aspect of it, I gave better than I lost. So, you know, and I would like to think that I was an okay fighter, that I was a pretty good fighter. But you have people coming up and that have students that, and I can understand their views, that they want to be this grand poobah, because, you know, most of the people that are teachers, and I mean this totally respectfully, by the way, most of these people that are teachers don't have a reputation of being a tough guy, of being a fighter. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they have to require their students to call them master, because that's how they gain some respect. And I can understand that. I totally go along with that, because, you know, you take college classes. You walk into the classroom, and all of a sudden this guy says, hi, my name is Professor Wallace. Okay, now all that means is that you've gone to classes, you've got your doctorate degree, and you have the term professor. That doesn't mean you know more than everybody else does. He would like you to think that he does, but that doesn't mean he does. That's just a title that we've given everybody. I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know. I just been all upset about it. What's great about it is I'll go to Hall of Fame things. Went to the Black Belt Hall of Fame out in Los Angeles several years ago, and there was Grandmaster this, and it was Master this, and it was Grand Poobah this, and it was Master this, and Grandmaster this, and then we have Superfoot. And I thought that was just wonderful. I love being just Superfoot. I don't want to be Grandmaster this. I don't want to be Master this. I'll just be Superfoot.
Awesome.
Because there's only one.
Exactly. And I'm hoping that the the people that are listening, hint to my kids students that might be listening, you know, you know, just, you know, leave the ego in check, because there's always going to be someone bigger and badder, and, you know, leave grandmaster poobah stuff away.
And earn the respect. Don't just claim it. Earn it.
Right.
You know? When they had the black belts line up, you know, this is before all the computer stuff and all that stuff, all the black belts would just line up, right? And I would just walk along. I would walk along the lineup and grab the guy's belt who had the most stripes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, he says, why you pick me, Wallace? And I said, well, you got the most stripes. You got to be the best fighter here. And I didn't come all this way to get second place, so we're going to fight right off the bat. And if you beat me right off the bat, I can go home right now. If you don't win and I win, then I got the rest of the day nice and easy.
Right on.
Wow. Yeah.
Love it. Right on. Right on. Yeah. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned the whole lining up thing. It's kind of like, yeah, I went to one seminar where, you know, they weren't lining up for an event or anything. They were lining up for a seminar. They were just lining up to bow in. And literally people, and these, you know, half of these people didn't even know each other. They were just, you know, black belts in several different arts. They literally literally jockeyed for position in the line to see who was going to be standing close to the high end of the line, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, really? Really? Yeah. I'm just going to stand over here on the end because when I
do the seminars, when I do seminars, they just get, okay, everybody come up here, and I'll tell them what we're going to do. And I said, okay, spread out. Everybody, no lines, because, you know, after you've done this for so many years, you get tired of lines. And I just stand in the middle of it, and I said, okay, everybody spread out a little bit. We're gonna loosen up real good, stretch out real good. Then we'll start working on our kick techniques with each other. And that way there's no lines, there's nobody jockeying for position, there's nobody claiming I'm higher ranked than you or you got to move over there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just have fun.
Throw
out the door and have a good time.
Very cool. Right on. All right. Back to you, Bob. I hogged questions again. Sorry. We're just having fun. Bob.
There, Bob.
There.
Bob, wake up. Wake up, Bob.
Bob.
Oh,
Bob.
I'm on mute. Oh, when an airplane goes by, I put it on mute. One of our listeners on the chat board, Deb Evans, asked a question. What kicking drills do you do to strengthen your legs or to keep them as strong?
Well, the kicking drills I do is, ironically enough, I work the flexibility, not hard flexibility, but just nice and easy flexibility. Then I'll do slow kicks. Because when you're doing slow kicks, number one, you need balance.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you need the strength to pick the leg up. Number three, you need strength to straighten the leg out. And it's not for the leg strength per se. The strength is to pick the leg up. The speed, the power, and the kick comes from the body moving forward. So the inertia, the momentum of your body moving forward, that's where the power and the kick comes from. You can take the strongest, you can take some guy with the strongest legs in the world, and if he throws a kick and he's leaning back, he's going to bounce off just like everybody else does. But if you're leaning into the kick and you got skinny-ass legs, you're still going to get the weight of your body driving into that kick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it, but just slow kicking, because now you're letting the isometric aspect of the strengthening come in as opposed to the fast contraction.
Very cool.
Very cool.
I know nowadays a lot of people are more and more getting into the, the old school type of slow drill kicking. Because, you know, there was a point where everyone was just training for power, power, power. Kick that bag hard. Kick it hard. Oh, you don't want to do it
that's
slow,
why
you, you know.
That's why you have hip problems and knee problems now. That's why we have the hip problems and the knee problems now. Because, you know, if you think about this, the Koreans especially, when you lock your leg out, when you throw a side kick and you lock your leg out, what happens to the knee joint? It hyperextends ever so slightly, a little bit. And you do that 35 times, what happens pretty soon? Well, those ligaments get stretched out, the cartilage within the joint gets kind of compressed a little bit. Now you got a loose joint, then you got to take chance of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So just make it nice. Do it slow. You know, do it slow.
Very cool.
You don't see golfers swing a golf club as hard as they can swing it. Nice and controlled.
Very cool. Great reminder on that science of kicking, because, you know, like I said, you know, a lot of people are going for power, and those same people that are practicing full power kicks in the air for like 10 years, you know, I'm hearing that they're all getting like knee surgeries and junk like that.
Oh yeah, they are. think about it also is that you know, if you don't hit anything, something's got to extend. Something has to hyperextend. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. So would you suggest that if people want to go for power, that they actually practice on the bag, instead of
kick a bag?
Got it.
Or do you know, squats? Do leg squats, and then after you do the leg squats, stretch out really good.
Mm-hmm.
So you remain flexible. The muscle doesn't have anything to do with the kicking. The movement has to do with the kicking. That's why you got these little bitty Japanese, these little bitty Koreans that have great power in their movements because of in their kicking techniques, because they have movement. They move into the kick. They have their body driving into it. No matter mm-hmm. how strong my leg is, I can have much, much, much more power when I have my 165 pounds driving into the kick as opposed to the leg just straightening out.
Mm-hmm.
So the power comes from their body moving forward. And also
awesome.
Getting the other guy to walk into it, maybe.
Love it. Love it. Awesome. All right. And I think it's back to you, Bob, again, I think.
Well,
Bill,
let's talk about your authoring. You've authored some books in the past. Tell us about and how did you get into your writing?
Well, I was doing my graduate work at Memphis State University, and one of my mentors at Memphis State University said, hey, why don't we do a book together on martial arts, because there is no college textbook on martial arts. And I said, well, I guess, okay, let's do it. So we did I don't know if you've heard about the publish or perish thing in the education field, but so I'm a graduate assistant at Memphis State University, and we have a book published called Karate Basic Concepts and Skills. And it was in publication for something like 20, 25 years. So, and it was a college textbook for that long. So I'm quite pleased with that one. Then Unique Publications, the guys that did Inside Kung Fu and Karate, Inside Karate, no things. We did two books with these guys. I did Dynamic Flexibility and Kicking. And then I also did The Ultimate Kick with these guys. And then Black Belt Magazine, we did the one called, I did articles for them, several articles for them, and then all of a sudden they wanted to publish those articles that I had, so they published that book with just my particular articles. So I guess there's four publications out there. And, I get a dollar every once in a while.
Yeah, but Unique's no longer around anymore. They closed Inside Kung Fu Magazine.
Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so but evidently the magazine or the book is still out there somebody, because I was up in Saskatchewan 3 weeks ago and signed a bunch of them. So I don't know where they got them from, but they're available somewhere.
Very cool. I'm
gonna
have to see if Amazon has any or anything like that. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Now, considering we've only got a few minutes left in our show, but I do want to ask you this question. If a young person approached you and they said, yeah, I want to study martial arts, I think it would be great, what advice would you give them?
Do it. Have a ball. The problem is with most people, see, we have so many things out there that we can do nowadays. We have soccer, we have basketball, we have softball, we have volleyball, we have football, we have all kinds of different activities that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And they all do the same thing, but the trouble is, or the beauty of it is, when we take martial arts, someday this just might save our life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the ball. Martial arts is something you do absolutely forever. You know, you see these advertisements on television where this guy says, "Oh yeah, I was a really good basketball player in high school and college. Now I can't play anymore because my joints hurt. This might do that, and whatever happens." Well, hey, I'm 68 years old. And I'm having no trouble kicking at all. There are guys out there that are 75 and 80 years old that still train. Maybe not hard, but they're still throwing a punch every once in a while. They're still throwing a kick once in a while, and it's something that you can do by yourself. Or you can do it with a whole bunch of people, or you can do it with mom and dad, brother, sister, husband and wife, or boyfriend and girlfriend. It's something
mm-hmm.
you can always do.
Awesome.
Now, Bill, I'm curious. I hate to bring this up like this, but at your age, can you still go down into the splits?
Yep. Yeah, with my two left hips and my one right hip and my right knee, I'm probably, you know, if I push it really hard, I would have no trouble going down. But right now, you know, I don't want to take a chance. I get about maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches from the full splits. And it'll take me about 30 seconds to do that. So.
Very
wow.
Cool.
But yeah, but I still love the kicking, still love doing the flexibility exercises, still love kicking people in the head. Makes me feel good.
You know, and I was telling Rusty earlier that, you know, my philosophy has always been the only time you kick people in the head is when they're on the ground.
Oh, no. It's fun kicking them in the head. Because when you kick them in the head, it makes you feel good. Then it's the best part about kicking them in the head is saying you're sorry. Say, hey, I didn't mean it.
Love it. Love it. It's like not very many people can, like, literally stand toe-to-toe with someone and then boop, kick you upside the head. And that, you know, that's a skill that I've always wanted. You know, I can only kick people in the head if they're, like, you know, shorter than me.
kick them in the knee, make them bend over, then kick them in the head.
There you go. That's been my trick.
That's right. Then you have to say you're sorry.
Yeah. That's
you don't have
trick.
To mean it, but you have to, yeah, you don't have to mean it, but you have to say it.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Now, that leads me to another question. When it comes to flexibility, is the adage, you know, use it or lose it, does that apply? Do you have to?
Well, not really. As long as you maintain it a little bit. You don't have to stretch hard every day. You don't, you know, if you can just do some kind of flexibility a couple times a week, not even hard. You know, let's say you take 30 seconds, take 2 minutes, take 5 minutes twice a week. You can maintain your flexibility because it's still soft tissue. And it's not really the muscles that you're working with. It's more the ligaments surrounding the joint than it is the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, take that to heart, listeners, because I went through an injury that took 2 years to heal, and I wasn't able to do a damn thing. And after that 2 years, I completely lost my flexibility.
A lot of times that's psychological too. Understand this: soft tissue wants to protect itself. So if you've damaged it somehow, if you've damaged the soft tissue, the muscles or the ligaments or something like this, they want to protect themselves. So what do they do to protect themselves? They just tighten up really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, they tighten up.
Well, I'm going to have to get back on the swing of thing then.
Yep. just talk to your muscles. Just talk to your muscles and teach them to relax. Because all it is relaxation. It's not stretching them. You don't want to stretch them. You just want to teach them to relax.
Right on. Very cool. Now, I just want to interrupt for just a second because I just got this news flash. Wow, speaking of disasters earlier, today, and I just got this news flash that at around 3:38 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a big tornado hit about 7 miles southwest of Kokomo.
Indiana.
And then there was another one that ripped through near Paducah, Kentucky.
Okay, that's way down south. That's just west of Louisville, about 50, 60 miles. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, apparently, the storm system at 3:22 p.m. Hit through Brookport, and now as of 3 p.m. EST, the storm moved into the Chicago area.
I'm looking at it right now. I'm watching it right now. There's all kinds. Indianapolis, Springfield, Illinois, Peoria, Louisville, Paducah. Yeah, Paducah just had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tornadoes in the area. And it just says water. Washington, Illinois right now just got devastated. They're showing a picture of it right now, just mangled.
Yeah, and this tornado is huge. Just seeing the breaking pictures, it's huge, and it's completely just devastated, all sorts of stuff. Orrin, Missouri, LaSalle County, Frankfort. It's just, oh, my gosh, you know, our thoughts go out to you guys in Illinois. My gosh, you know. It's crazy these disasters that are happening one right after the other, and you know Tornado Alley gets.
Yeah, God is saying enough is enough.
Yeah, yeah, and
right
you know
on,
Tornado
no way,
Alley hits.
We've Well, we've done so much to this earth. We've changed the earth so much. We've done things to it. We haven't replenished it. We've taken stuff from it, haven't given anything back. And Mother Nature says, okay, guys, you know, I've got to fix this somehow, and you just happen to be in the way. And, you know, I apologize for what people think or so forth, but, hey, it's God's way of saying we're going to straighten this part up. It's the way it is. It, I mean, you put Tornado Alley, right? You built your house there. You know, it's like New Orleans. Hey, why would you want to build a house below sea level?
Man, it's crazy. And this storm is it's moving across, you know, the land at about like 60 miles
right
an
now.
Hour. And,
yeah, I'm looking at it right now where there's lower Mississippi Valley to the southern Appalachians now. Tennessee Valley could see, they're talking about it right now.
This sucker is huge. So, man, you know, looks like this fundraiser weekend that I'm doing next weekend is going to help toward this too, because this is just incredible. But we are almost out of time. Yeah, thank you. We are almost out of time, and wow, what a great interview! Thank you so much, Bill, for joining us and having so much fun.
Well, thank you guys very much for having me. I had a ball with you guys too, and you know, keep that leg up and keep kicking people in the head. Makes me feel wonderful.
You bet. The next student I see is going to get kicked in the head. No one's coming to class.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Have a great rest of the day, Bill.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys. And
have
take care.
Have a great afternoon.
You too, Bill.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Right on. And that was Bill Superfoot Wallace talking to a legend. Awesome. We had a great time on the show, and for anyone that missed the beginning of the show, check out our archive a little bit later. Give us about 15 minutes and you can listen to the whole show. And you know, some people, I got a text message from one of my friends going, oh my god, you know, you guys are like sounding so rude and stuff. I'm like, come on, you know. We're joking around, we're having a blast. That's what the Dynamic Dojo is all about. No ego.
Yeah, but Rusty, you started it.
He did. He just had a, you know, he just went right in and just started having fun and playing with us and stuff. And that's what it is. That's what it is, folks. You know, we like to have fun. And it's not fun at the expense of anyone. It's just getting together and just being who we are, being, you know, being happy people, you know. And
that's right.
Bill
Absolutely.
Wallace. Is, right. And Bill Wallace is just another example of the no ego, no bullshit type of people. Wonderful to talk to guests like that. So for listeners out there, if you have a suggestion as to who we can bring on as a guest, or if you have a suggestion about a forum subject, you know, hit one of us up. Hit Sifu Robert Deal, friend request him, friend request me, Rashida DeJesus. I've got two profiles, so you can hit either one of them. Or get on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page and let us know, because this show is all about you, the listeners. And, wow, our thoughts go out to the people in the area there in Tornado Alley that just got, just as we were doing the show, got hit hard. So for people in the Chicago
Rusty,
area.
I just texted Sokey Gray.
Greg,
and I said, oh, I understand you're having some weather issues back there. And he said, oh, yeah, major right now.
Oh, my gosh. Is he okay?
Yeah, he's fine. He wanted to call in, except he thought we were doing a 6 o'clock show and not our Sunday brunch show. So he got a little tied up. He was going to call and talk to Sensei.
Okay.
But I love our guests. They're absolutely amazing. There is no ego. When he asked me to call him, he said, hi, this is Bill. It wasn't Sensei, it was Grandmaster Wallace, none of that.
So, you know, yeah, just as a reminder to the youngsters that might be listening to our show, and gosh, you know, if they are listening, I shouldn't be cussing as much, but, but you know, just know that, you know, titles are earned, respect is earned. So, you know, just keep your ego in check and you'll be surprised at how many people will respect you for the person you are if you don't have to demand it. So anyway, this is the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show. I'm Rosita. And introduce yourself again, Robert.
And I am Robert.
And we will see everybody next week. Stay tuned on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page for the subject of next week's show. Me and Sifu Bob are still trying to figure out what that's going to be. So stay tuned, and we'll see everyone next week. See you, everybody. Bye, Bob. Bye, everyone.
Bye. See you next week.
You bet.